Samuel Adams is without one of the most important founding fathers, but he's often overlooked. He is called the lightning rod of the American Revolution. Samuel Adams was certainly one of the very first to call on the American colonies to declare independence from Britain while maintaining dependence upon God. Historian Jane Hampton Cook is the author of such books as Stories of Faith and Courage from the Revolutionary War. And she joins us now to talk about Samuel Adams, especially as we consider America at 250. Less than a year from now, we'll be celebrating the 250th anniversary of the adoption of the Declaration of Independence. I read in one book where they said, in a sense, the Declaration of Independence was the culmination of the life work of Samuel Adams. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point, and let's welcome Jane Hampton Cook back to the program. Jane, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
You are one of the few historians, no, I shouldn't word it that way, but you know who Samuel Adams was, and I'm surprised how many people don't know about him, but I want to have you, talk about him. First of all, why is he forgotten, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, he didn't become president of the United States. He didn't lead troops in battle. That could be part of it, but he recruited John Adams, to join the cause, and he was definitely the firebrand of the Revolution and the father of the American Revolution because he had a very clear vision. He believed that freedom was a gift from God and that the right to freedom being the gift of the Almighty, and he saw himself as wanting to put that into action, and he saw the conflict between England as an attempt to thwart, God's desire for freedom. And so he had that vision, and the Declaration of Independence was the culmination of numerous years of his thinking about what freedom means.
Samuel Adams was a very religious man. He has been described as the last of the Puritans. Any comments about his faith?
Well, he really believed that freedom was a gift from God. And in 1772, a year before the Boston Tea Party, he wrote that the right to freedom being the gift of the Almighty, the rights of the colonists as Christians, may be best understood by reading and carefully studying the institutions of the great lawgiver and the head of the Christian church, which are to be found clearly written in the New Testament. And so he really did see that God had a vision and a plan for men to be free. And he fought really hard with his pen. He was a clerk with the Massachusetts legislature, and his ideas literally circulated. He called it a circular, and he sent his ideas to the different governments of the local governments, I guess you could say, of the colonies. And so that's really why he became the father of the American Revolution, or the firebrand, because it was his principles and ideas and policies that were, being picked up by the other colonies and then coming together through the Declaration of Independence.
So explain what the committees of correspondence were, and it's my understanding he was basically the prime mover in that whole movement. And you've kind of described it to some degree. It was a way to communicate to these people in other colonies, but that just kind of wasn't done prior to this, correct?
No, it wasn't. They definitely wanted to be separate from each other. They almost were like different countries. That's how they viewed themselves. But what happened is when the king abolished the government of Massachusetts, Samuel Adams sort of anticipated that that was going to happen. So he set up local committees in Massachusetts that they would communicate by sending horseback riders like Paul Revere to carry messages. And that communication network was crucial, because as those governments fell, colony governments, these committees of correspondence were vital. I read where Nathan Hale in Connecticut attended a committee meeting, and that's how he found out about Lexington and Concord, was through the committees of correspondence, and that was in Connecticut. But all of that was organized through Samuel Adams.
So when we talk about the whole Revolutionary War, even though Philadelphia is often, mentioned as kind of like the main city, it really all kind of began in Boston, and therefore it really all began with Samuel Adams more than any single individual, correct?
That is true. I mean, he is definitely the firebrand of the American Revolution because the conflict with the king originated in Massachusetts. Adams established, along with John Hancock, the Sons of Liberty, and they would gather at the Liberty Tree in Boston. And they were fighting back against these policies. And part of their reason for it being focused in Massachusetts was that that's where the king sent his troops. In 1768, he sent troops because of the backlash he had received from the Stamp Act and the opposition to the Stamp Act. And he sent, you know, military soldiers to Boston in particular. And that was of grave concern to people like Samuel Adams, because they saw their liberties, you know, being siphoned away and under threat by what we call militia law or military governments, which was a dictatorship.
Can you explain what the Stamp Act was, and then why was it so hated, not just in Massachusetts, but in virtually all the colonies of America?
So the Stamp Act was the king's way of trying to put a stamp on almost every paper transaction back then. And people were going to have to buy these stamps for all their, you know, getting married, their marriage records, their law business records. And this was really the first time the king had attempted to tax the American people. He'd had a sugar tax, but this one was the big one. And people throughout the colonies rejected it, and they refused to participate in it. But back then, the only time people would pay, quote, a tax to England was mostly just to recover shipping costs. There was, you know, a tariff put on things that were sent back and forth, but they weren't expecting to have to add a tax on top of the shipping costs. And this was a paradigm shift. You know, it would be like going from, you know, no personal income tax to a personal income tax, as we did as a country in 1913. It was completely out of the norm and out of their expectations. And the colonists, you know, they had, they hung the stamp collectors in effigy. They marched and had, demonstrations against it. And the king and parliament ultimately revoked it. But the king responded in one way by sending military soldiers to occupy Boston.
Yeah, Boston. Boston, Boston. It all gets back to Boston. And again, I guess Samuel Adams is the main guy. By the way, ironically, Samuel Adams today is known more for beer. What's the link there? I understand from my reading, he was kind of a failed maltster. He really was kind of a failed businessman in this endeavor and that endeavor. Not that he was dishonest or anything. It just wasn't successful. And he really found his calling around the age of 41 in terms of writing and writing about politics. But talk about Samuel Adams and beer briefly.
Well, he, you know, his father had the, you know, brewing business, and they were actually maltsters, and that was what he was trying to make a living off of. But he just couldn't do it. It wasn't his passion. It wasn't where his heart really was. And he found his voice, as you said, at age 41 when he began to talk about politics and policies and things like that. So, you know, he's known today for beer because there's a brand, I believe it was started, you know, 100 years or so later than the American Revolution under the Samuel Adams name. But I really hope the America 250th celebration helps people reconnect and learn about people like Samuel Adams and understand, you know, what they faced and the sacrifices they made for liberty.
I agree with you. And by the way, it's my understanding that even the face that they use for the beer is not even his image. It's Paul Revere's image. Isn't that weird?
That's true.
Unbelievable. All right. Talk about the Boston Tea Party, since he was the prime mover. It's interesting, though, because when the Boston Tea Party was taking place, he had hundreds of eyewitnesses that he was right there in this big meeting with all these people as this whole thing commenced. And yet I guess he was the mastermind behind what actually happened. So just go ahead and take a couple minutes to describe the Boston Tea Party, because that became another catalyst for British reaction against Boston.
Yeah, so the king had put taxes on goods like glass and lead and indigo and things like that, but he ended up revoking those taxes except for the tax on tea. And the people were against any taxes. They didn't think the king had a right to tax them in that way.
Without representation.
Became the focal point. Yes. And so the Boston Tea Party, the king sent ships that were from the East India Company, and they brought tea to Boston, and the colonists would not let them unload their chest of tea. And they asked the governor, Hutchison, to send them back, and he refused to do so. And so there was they met at the Old South Meeting House and had a meeting, and Samuel Adams described that as issuing the resolves of the body of the people, and how that that threatened, you know, the overseers, the British overseers of the colony. But at night on the 16th of December, men dressed up as Mohawk Indians and dumped the tea, threw those chests of tea into the harbor, and that was their public demonstration against the tea tax. And the king was furious when he found out about this. And then the heavy hand came down from the king in 1774. And it was a real catalyst for the revolution. That's when the government was abolished in Massachusetts. And that's when those committees of correspondence became crucial for people to be able to tell people in the countryside what was actually going on in Boston. And Adams was, you know, behind all of that. He was the organizer. I don't think he was actually at the Tea Party. I think they purposefully kept him and John Hancock away from it. But they you know, enacted that, and also, you know, held meetings at the Liberty Tree. And
what is the Liberty Tree?
Liberty Tree was a big elm tree on the Boston Commons, and it was a great gathering place. People knew where to go. They knew that they could tack signs and make, you know, signs and banners, hang the stamp master in effigy, for example. It was their demonstration place, and it was a symbol that, you know, the other colonies began to also have Liberty Trees in different communities, just taking a tree, a large tree, and making that the place where they would meet to discuss the, you know, policies that were coming over from England that were so detrimental to their ability to make a living, and to this dictatorship that the king was really implementing throughout the colonies.
Yeah, it's interesting. I read at history.com that by the time of the American Revolution, there were hundreds of Liberty Trees throughout the colonies. And the main one, as you said earlier, was the one in Boston. And I know that Britain chopped it down on purpose in 1775, the same year as the Revolutionary War began in the attack against Lexington and Concord. Well, basically, we're out of time, but we could give you a 20 seconds closing thought. JaneCook.com for more information. Samuel Adams.
Yes, I think the firebrand of the Revolution, the father of the American Revolution, and a man of faith, and just really a genius when it came to the right policies for freedom.
All right, Jane, thank you so much. And it's an exciting time to think about this 250th anniversary around the corner. All the best to you.
You too. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.